This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
You take this woman as your lawful wedded wife.
Ooh, yeah!
Oh, no.
Place the ring on her finger and repeat after me. With this ring. I thee wed.
Hello, and welcome to With This Ring, Episode 4. I'm one of your co-hosts, Ryan Everett, along with...
Hi, I'm Cindy Everett, your other co-host.
And tonight we will continue our look through the GWWE Greatest Matches Ever poll. Tonight what we're going to do is, last week we looked at matches that happened once before, before they would happen at WrestleMania, and this week, logically, we're going to follow that with watching the matches that happened at WrestleMania. In most parts, the more famous matches.
Yep.
Okay, so let's just jump right into it, because I think we'll have a lot of discussion after each match this time about comparing it to the WrestleMania match and the previous match.
Right, right. Well, you will.
Right. So our first match goes to March.
Actually, I had a general question for you first about WrestleMania in general. What WrestleMania do you think you've watched the most?
17, I've watched a lot.
Oh, we watched that. Well, we had two matches from there.
Two matches from there, and it's generally considered the best WrestleMania of all time. So I've seen that one a lot. 7, a lot. 10.
What was in 7 and 10?
7 had Randy Savage versus the Ultimate Warrior, and also Hulk Hogan versus Sergeant Slaughter. Mm. It was the first one I watched live.
Okay, yeah, so.
And we talked before about 6. I saw a lot because that was one that I bought as a previewed video and was able to wear out the tape. 13 I watched a lot, even though it's one of the lower rated WrestleManias, but I bought that on pay-per-view, so I was able to rewatch it easily.
Okay.
Yeah, but I would say probably 17, 7, 10, and then 13. And three of those are looked at pretty favorably if you're ranking the WrestleManias. And 13 is looked at pretty low, but as we'll get to, it has one of, at the very least, the top five matches in at least WrestleMania history, I would say.
Okay.
So, back to the list. Our first match was... another match that is rated very highly in WrestleMania and just all-time listings would be WrestleMania 3, the Pontiac Silverdome in Pontiac, Michigan, mm-hmm. right outside of Detroit.
Right, and we did watch them in chronological order
this week, which
think that really did help.
It does kind of help give a little bit of...
more flow.
It helps the build-up, sort
yes,
of.
Yes, I think so, too. Yeah.
So the first match we watched was WrestleMania 3, Randy Savage defending the Intercontinental title against Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. Randy Savage, of course, had Miss Elizabeth with him. Ricky the Dragon Steamboat had George the Animal Steele.
That's right.
How did you feel about the Animal?
He's really hairy.
Yes.
I know that's his gimmick, but...
yeah,
he could use some laser hair surgery.
He was like a big face, obviously, but
really?
I always...
he was a face?
Well, yeah, I mean, he's helping Ricky Steamboat.
Did he actually wrestle, or was he just like a
character? He had wrestled before. He, like, was a wrestler more so in, like, the 70s early 80s. And then, because his thing was he only wrestled in the summers because he was a gym teacher in Detroit, Michigan. Or right outside Detroit, I think. But he wrestled every summer. He would go to New York and be a big heel in Vince McMahon Sr.'s WWWF. He had
WWWF?
Like, yes, 3 W's.
Okay.
Worldwide Wrestling Federation. When Vince Kennedy McMahon took over, he dropped the wide and just streamlined it.
Yeah.
You know. But, so he was, so he came into New York, was a big heel, had sold out Madison Square Garden a bunch of times with Bruno Sammartino, was a big, whenever he came in, he was the top heel at the time. But then in 1985, he came back and he had a mat, like a six-man tag where he made a mistake, so then the heels attacked him, so then he turned good, and it was kind of, he was just like the simpleton good guy, though.
I could see that, yeah. No, I thought, though, that they didn't really distract or deter too much from what was happening in the ring, as much as, other, I mean, the matches we've watched with interference.
Right.
That was there's lower minimal, on the scale.
Yes.
Yeah.
And although this really, it helped culminate. The Animal, Steel, and Randy Savage had been feuding since the previous January, actually.
Oh, okay.
Because George the Animal, Steel was infatuated with the lovely Miss Elizabeth. It was kind of like, they all, Vince McMahon was always pushing, it's like King Kong, and...
Oh, yeah.
Faye Ray? Yeah, but there was a more recent release, I think, where it was Daryl Hannah at the time.
Not sure.
Someone. In the 80s, they made another King Kong. But that's what they were kind of going for, and that's kind of what... So the build-up to this match, do you remember the how we got to this match?
I don't really quite remember why they started feuding, but there was the ring bell to the throat.
Yes.
And Ricky Steamboat couldn't talk. And then they had the match that we watched last time, which Macho Man won. Yeah. Macho Man won and pretty much just left the ring right away.
Yeah, he just kind of got out.
That was a little strange. This was supposed to be the rematch from that. And I think I hadn't seen this match before, but I definitely remember Ricky Steamboat talking about this match when we watched the Macho Man documentary a couple years ago. Yeah. And so, it was very, very good.
Yeah,
I understand the hype.
So the story was in November of 86... It was just, there wasn't really a feud here. It was just Ricky Steamboat had climbed up to be the number one contender for the IC title. So he got his match against Randy Savage. And during it, Randy Savage just could not put him away. So he got pissed off and grabbed the, first he drove him onto the guardrail with the double axel into his throat.
Mm-hmm.
And then threw him back in the ring and took the ring bell and drove it into his throat.
There was a lot of ring bell involvement in these matches.
Yes. Well, it's an easy weapon because it's always going to be there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I just never paid attention when I was watching wrestling casually, or not watching it. I feel like it's.
I think it was definitely more back then.
Yeah, not recently. Thing.
Well, now they really don't use weapons as much. Period.
There's still tables, ladders, and chairs.
Matches. Yeah, but those are always like. Branded as tables.
Okay, that's true. Yeah, there's no
ring bell match. There never was, at least. Maybe that'll be coming up soon.
Informal ring bell match, yeah.
Right. So, yeah, and because of it, Ricky Steamboat lost the use of his voice.
Sure.
Yeah. And eventually, though, he came back and wanted a match with Randy Savage and was given it. And they kind of built it up like this is his last shot. He kind of mentions that in his promo.
Right.
And then they have a match. It's how long would you think the match is?
This one we watched or last week's?
This one.
Oh, this one? I think it felt like it was a fast pace. I want to say maybe around like 10 or 11 minutes.
Oh, okay. It's 14 minutes.
Okay. Yeah.
It's the longest,
that sounds right.
Longest match on the WrestleMania card that year.
Really?
Yes. Because they had 12 matches.
Oh, wow.
And this was the longest. The second longest was the main event, which we'll get to eventually.
Okay. What's the main event?
Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant.
Oh, like Unstoppable Force.
Well, quote unquote, the first time they have that match. But yeah, so that was, and that was really what they sold the event as. But like any special about WrestleMania matches, they'll always show this match. And guys like Chris Jericho or Edge, Christian, like guys that are younger and a little bit smaller. We'll always say, like, this is the match.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that the headliners make a bigger name, but I'm sure, like, if you just look at the matches, you know, in and of themselves, I'm sure the Ricky Steamboat, I can almost guarantee the Ricky Steamboat Macho Man would be better.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's...
actual match.
Yeah. There's no denying, like, an actual match quality that was the best. I mean, it was the best match of the year for WWF. It was probably... It was the best match on pay-per-view yet, that they had had. I mean, this was only 3 years into pay-per-view, but...
Right.
And it's just kind of... Yeah, I mean, there's really... saying it set the standard is almost understating what
it did. Well, did you know that this set the attendance record for the largest recorded live indoor sporting event in North America?
I did.
Do you know how long they had that record?
I would say until something at Cowboy Stadium.
Yes. Do you know what at Cowboy Stadium?
The NBA All-Star Game, was it?
Yeah, very good. 2010. So
okay.
The attendance at WrestleMania was 93,173. And then the NBA All-Star Game was 108,000.
Okay.
But do you know how long? So they held the record a pretty long time from 87 to 2010. Well,
that's a thing.
What?
Dave Meltzer, who is like the wrestling... He writes the Wrestling Observer. It's like the biggest wrestling newsletter where it goes behind the scenes and stuff. Mm-hmm. He's always disputed that.
Disputed what?
The attendance record. Okay. He said that he's talked to the WWF promoter at the time and that the real number was closer to 78,000.
Okay.
Which is still...
Wait, actually, I was looking at a ranking of all the attendance, and this is the highest by about 13,000. So okay. That actually kind of makes sense if it was more in the high 70s range.
Yeah.
But
and also,
Wikipedia
like,
had it cited as 93,173. Yeah. So it held the record for 23 years. How long did it hold the attendance record for the Silverdome?
Well, didn't the Pope appear there?
You're so smart.
Well, about wrestling stuff, unfortunately.
That's so how long was the... So it had the Silverdome...
The Pope record. Was like there for like...
7 months later.
Yeah, I knew it was... It was right around then.
Was pretty much... was broken right after that, so... I didn't know that. Did you ever see John Paul II when he was in America?
No, he was in Chicago.
A couple times.
I think that was before I was.
That's true. You were a little on the young side.
I remember the one time he came in 93, I think he came to Denver.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And like I remember kids from St. Bede's, my grade school, went there like as part of the youth. It was like the youth conference or something.
Yeah, that's right. I remember
he said, everyone was like, we love you, we love you. And he was like, John Paul too, love you too.
Oh, yeah. He loves the band U2?
I hope not. That would, I mean, that's just a shame if anyone loves them. But anyways, back to the match.
And I was in Rome when John Paul II died.
Yeah, so.
In 2005, yeah. So
you killed him. Good job.
No. Maybe.
But we'll leave that to another podcast. That's another podcast altogether.
Pretty much, yeah.
But, so the match, overall, rankings, I think it has to be a 10 out of 10
yes.
to me.
And no, I think that's pretty...
I mean, like, almost everywhere it's rated 10 out of 10, 5 out of 5, you know, whatever mm-hmm. you use.
Whatever you're using.
Yes, whatever your
metric is.
Yes. Well, you gave Stanley a thumbs up,
right.
Jim an A, and Dwight 10 out of 10.
Yeah, we'll see if there's a conversion chart in the back.
But... Anyway, so yeah, it's easily one of the best mm-hmm. matches. Although really watching it now, and this might just be recency bias and the fact that I've seen this match probably at least 50 times.
I believe that, yeah.
It's probably about 15 for me.
Oh, really?
And my total out of 100. I think it's just kind of...
Why is that?
It's just... There's something about it that... And I know that they did rehearse. I mean,
oh yeah, it's very choreographed.
And also, I mean, especially seeing the match from Toronto the month before, mm-hmm. you see like half of the match.
That's a good. It was kind of similar
beforehand. Yeah. I mean, there's the one sequence at the end, at the like 2/3 through the match where they do all these pinfall reversals, and that the one that Randy Savage reverses at one point. At the Toronto match, he ends up holding the tights and gets the win. So that's kind of, it shows you that they rehearsed. And there's nothing wrong with that, but it's just kind of, it's not saying it's a bad match at all. It's just saying the other matches ahead of it, I think.
You think so?
Are a little above it.
It's more of like a performance kind of
thing. Yeah, and I like I said, I think it's a great match and it definitely holds its place in history.
Yeah, and I think if you were going to show like a match like to a non-wrestling fan like right, me, that would yeah. be one where you could like stand alone and say this is kind of what you should be
right.
regarding as like the top match.
And as a network edit thing, they have out
music.
They hand out Ricky Steamboat's music, but luckily they do have, because sometimes they have to cut this out because it's when the music hits, but they wait. They have the pinfall, which you hear the crowd pop for that. You hear the crowd, and then they have Howard Finkel, the ring announcer, announce the new Intercontinental Champion, Ricky Steamboat. And then like 5 seconds later, the music hits, which is good because that's when they do the edit. Whereas other times in the with the network, they have to edit it like right away because the music hits right away. So you get to actually hear the crowd reaction,
that's
which
cool.
is, I mean, it's something that very few people care about, but I'm glad that they get the full crowd reaction.
It kind of gives you the full effect.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
So 15, okay.
Around 15. I'm not sure the exact number, but it's probably somewhere around there. All right. Next, we go to...
10 years later.
10 years later, yes. WrestleMania 13. Where is... Here we go. The date was March 23rd, 1997.
Rosemont and Horizons. Still no fun facts for that. Still a very boring place.
Oh, it's a very fascinating place. What are you talking about? You had Scott Stapp getting drunk there last night.
That's true. We talked about that.
That's it? That's the only thing that's happened?
I didn't really look into it because I couldn't find anything the first time. So I got to maybe try some other sources.
All right. Yep. And as I said a little earlier, this is a dumpster of a show. There's two good matches on it.
And this is one of them.
And luckily, this is one of... the best matches in WWF history.
You think so?
Oh, easily.
A little too bloody for me.
I understand that, but so it's definitely in case you can't tell, we're not talking about the Sultan versus Rocky Maivia for the Intercontinental title. We're talking about Steve Austin versus Bret Hart in the submission match.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically, the story going into it was, well, we saw the Survivor Series match last time. That was kind of, Bret Hart came back, and he decided that he wanted to wrestle who he thought was the best wrestler. And
right.
He thought it was Steve Austin. And he beat him in a straight-up match, but it was kind of like a fluky roll-up pin.
Yeah.
It's not like he made him submit to the sharpshooter or anything. And then the next month, Steve Austin just attacks him all the time.
That's really? Okay.
Steve Austin's MO. He just attacks everyone, but mainly Bret Hart, because that's the one he dislikes the most. But he would attack, like, the British Bulldog just because he was related to Bret Hart.
Are they?
Yeah, they're brother-in-laws.
Oh, they're in-laws.
Well, yeah.
Because he's from London.
Well, yeah, but he married Bret Hart's sister.
Oh, okay.
That doesn't mean you can't be
I know, in-laws. But I just don't automatically think that they're related.
Right. But, so then, at the Royal Rumble... in January, it's Steve Austin, The Undertaker, Vader, Bret Hart, and Fake Diesel, aka Kane, are the last five people in. Austin or Bret Hart gets thrown out by Bret Hart.
Did you say Bret Hart gets?
Sorry, Steve Austin gets thrown out by Bret Hart, but the referees are tied up in Mankind and Terry Funk are fighting with each other.
Okay.
So Steve Austin just kind of goes by the apron and waits. Bret Hart tosses Fake Diesel Kane, and Austin comes back in, tosses the Undertaker and Vader, who are fighting on one side of the ring, then comes over and eliminates Bret Hart and is declared the winner. So then the next night on Raw, Bret Hart comes out and is whining about like how he got screwed and that he's quitting the WWF unless something else happens. So then Gorilla Monsoon comes out.
Oh.
He's the president at the time.
Oh, good for him.
And he decides that there will now be a fatal four-way match, they call it, at the next pay-per-view, where it was Steve Austin versus Vader versus Bret Hart versus The Undertaker, the last four guys in the Rumble.
Okay.
Outside of Fake Diesel Kane, but he was legally eliminated by Bret Hart.
Okay.
So he doesn't matter until a year later when he becomes Kane. But so they
has he ever mattered?
No, not really.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
So Steve Austin comes out and yells at Gorilla Monsoon and has the classic line that you call yourself the gorilla, yet you hee haw out here like a jackass.
Oh, I had not heard that one before.
Yes, and just goes off on him. And Bret Hart, of course, comes back and decides that he'll re-enter the Federation. So they have the match at In Your House, which is supposed to be the winner gets a shot at the champion at WrestleMania.
Right.
Then 4 days behind, before this pay-per-view, they had a live Thursday Raw because of the Westminster Dog Show. Because that Obviously. Was a thing that mattered more than Raw at the time.
And that shows the relative importance.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, that was even in 2000 when Raw was getting monster ratings. It's still preempted by the dog show. So they have that match.
Well, dog show's only once a year. Raw's right. every week. So.
Well, then they also always were preempted by the U.S. Open.
Hmm. Okay.
So anyways, on this Thursday Raw. Golf? Tennis.
Oh, nice.
So on this Thursday Raw, Shawn Michaels, who was the champ, comes out at the time and vacates the title, saying he has a knee injury and also he lost his smile.
What does that mean?
Basically, it's weird. Yeah. He's on a lot of painkillers. No one really knows how injured he was. Some people say he just didn't want to lose the title to Bret Hart at WrestleMania.
Lost his smile.
Yeah. That's
I don't know what that means.
So, at the pay-per-view, Bret Hart wins the title, and then the next night he has to fight Psycho Sid. And Steve Austin, the match is supposed to happen three different times. Each time Steve Austin comes out and attacks Bret Hart.
Nice.
Finally, the last time it actually starts, but again, Steve Austin attacks Bret Hart and interferes. And while doing this, blows out his knee.
Oh, no.
Which is why, so he blows out his knee, Sid wins the title. They decide that they're going to have an I Quit match with Steve Austin versus Bret Hart at WrestleMania. And Steve Austin wasn't at the TV the next week when they announced this because he was having knee surgery. Mm. And here's it on TV. No one called him and told him this. And he talks about how he was watching at home and thought, well, I only have four moves. Two of them are one of them is punching, one of them is kicking, one of them is a stunner. The other one is jumping on someone and punching them. How the hell am I going to have a submission match?
Yeah, that's not good.
And also, I'm going to be doing this with the first time ever wearing a knee brace.
Mm.
So this was his first match back after blowing out his knee. And it is a great match.
It is. I liked this one. Both Steve Austin matches this week I liked better than last week.
Yeah,
Attitude Era, so of course they're out of the ring right. and they're roaming all around. Well, this is the Bowl Cut Kid.
Yes.
One of the iconic spectators.
One of the best shots we ever got of the Bowl Cut Kid. As also,
there's multiple shots. There's multiple shots.
He's very involved in this. Yeah. Also important to note, Ken Shamrock is the guest referee.
That's right. Looked like that. Looking ridiculous.
Yes, in a very medium sized T-shirt and
extra small
bike shorts. I mean, not the extra small that Shawn Michaels would wear occasionally, but pretty small nonetheless.
Yeah, no, I thought the good moves, good aerial moves, good flying elbow from Bret Hart. They knock that guy. Elbow. That's true. They knock over that poor guy next to the announcer table. I don't know what PA they knocked over, but it was good. Just for me, a little bit of too much blood near the end. But I know you're talking about that iconic shot when he's in the sharpshooter and
pressing up as much as he can, and the blood is dripping down his face over his mouth.
Definitely an iconic shot. Yeah, but ugh.
Yeah, it's grisly.
There was dried blood in the ring even before they started from previous matches. In this one?
No, that was the neck. Austin versus Rock.
That's right. I'm getting this confused.
But yeah, and that was, I mean, this is what I say, like, you know, the thing now is like, oh, there's no blood in the WWF. Oh, it's horrible. And it's really not. Blood doesn't need to be used, but when it's used right, like it is used
right,
here.
Right, that's true.
It adds to the story so much. Because originally, they weren't supposed to get blood.
Oh,
like,
really?
It was still technically not outlawed, but it was still, they didn't want you doing it. But Bret Hart, supposedly, according to his book, which
I'm not going to read.
No, it's very long. And it's
how
mostly,
long is it?
It's about 500 pages.
What?
And it's all about, a lot of it is about how much sex he had with groupies and stuff. Because he wants to make himself sound awesome, I guess. But anyways, but he talks about how, I think this was true, about how he wanted, how him and Steve Austin were talking earlier in the day about the match, and they both kind of agreed it needed something extra to really add the juice to it, and they decided to bleed. But then you don't know about the story, because he says that Steve Austin told him that he never bled before,
and then
he needed Bret Hart to blade him, but Steve Austin bled numerous times in WCW. He also wrestled in ECW, so he probably bled there. That's where the story kind of falls apart. But you could at least see them talking earlier and agreeing that it needs
right.
to bleed. And there's
something
I mean,
extra.
You really don't see when, you know, Austin's allegedly cut when he gets thrown into the guardrail, and that's when he starts bleeding. You don't know if he cut himself or if Bret Hart. You can't tell by camera, but
I'm sure Steve Austin cut himself.
Yeah, and I mean, after that, Steve Austin bled plenty of times on WWE TV and never had a problem cutting himself. So I don't think he was gun shy for this being the biggest match of his career. And this, so the match itself is great.
Mm-hmm.
There's times throughout the match where you hear the crowd. Well, when they both come out, I would say 70% of the fans cheer for Austin, probably like 85% cheer for Bret Hart at the beginning. But then through the match, like the one time Bret Hart has the chair on Austin's ankle.
Oh, yeah.
And he was going up to the top to jump off it. And that's actually something Steve Austin first did a couple months prior to a guy named Brian Pillman. So whenever you do that, it's called Pillmanizing an ankle.
Oh.
So, but Austin gets up and hits Bret Hart with the chair twice. And that is when the crowd is just going like, nuts.
Right.
That's like when they lose it.
Goes over to his side.
Yeah, I think that was the big thing. And then the end of the match, he gets the sharpshooter on him. Austin's bleeding like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
He fights twice, pushing up as hard as he can. One time he actually breaks the sharpshooter.
Right.
But then Bret Hart locks it back in, and then Ken Shamrock asks him twice if you don't respond, I'll call the match, and he does it. Austin's
calls
out.
The match, yeah.
So he calls the match, and then so Bret Hart's like just kind of walking around pissed off, and then he starts attacking Austin again. So then Ken Shamrock throws him and is like, "Do you want to fight me?"
Right.
And Bret Hart like teases it and then walks out of the ring, and he's giving the finger to fans. The one fan like pushes him, so Bret Hart like goes, pushes him back and gives him the finger. And then
kind of a sore winner.
Yeah, well that was the kind of the point. It led to what they were the whole story. And then after that the referees go in to try and help Steve Austin and he can't even walk, but he gives the one ref the stunner.
That's right.
And walks out by himself with a crowd chanting Austin. And then so I mean that's really right away, Steve Austin is the biggest face in the company.
Mm-hmm.
Bret Hart's the biggest heel. And the next night, they did even solidify that Austin wasn't on, but Bret Hart was on, and he talks about how he hates, how he still loves his Canadian fans. He still loves his fans in Europe, but all the American fans, people who cheer for Steve Austin, can stick it.
Oh, wow, wow, wow.
So that's kind of the next 6 months, that was his deal. He was Mr. Anti-America. Which was actually great because they had a bunch of shows in Canada.
Oh, that's convenient.
There was like in the summer, it'd be Raw in Dallas. The Hart Foundation would get booed so much, and Steve Austin would be cheered. Shawn Michaels would get cheered. Next week they'd have Raw in Canada. It'd be the opposite reaction and back and forth.
Hmm.
So, this match, 10 out of 10, obviously.
Oh, okay. Obviously. I didn't know that was obvious.
Yes.
But okay.
I mean, I think this is another one that, like, everyone
gets
5 out of 5, 10
right.
out of 10, 2 Stanley Nichols, however you want to claim it. And for me, this is number 2.
Really?
On my all-time.
Wow.
And at this point, like, the top 10, I think it kind of, like, gets to all these matches are like
top
perfect.
Yeah,
almost.
How do you decide between 2 and 3?
I think at a point
four.
It becomes favorite
okay.
matches, and just like the one quibble you might have. And this match, I don't have any quibbles with. It's just number one has more stuff to put it over the top.
Okay.
Anything else about this one?
No, I think in general I like this one. I think in general just I like the WrestleMania ones more than the
non-WrestleMania ones,
which I don't know if I expected that. I mean, we know they'd have more hype, but
right.
I figured some of the non-WrestleMania ones might be actually better in quality, but really so far I think the WrestleMania ones have been better.
Yeah, I think the only one, I mean, the Bret Hart Austin at Survivor Series, it's a great wrestling match. And this, so if you value an actual wrestling technical match over brawling. Mm-hmm. I could see that argument, but otherwise, like if you take the whole storyline of the match, it's, I think, no contest.
Okay.
All right. So next we go to April 1st, 2001. Our first of two matches in WrestleMania X7 in the Astrodome.
They called it X7?
Yeah, because I don't know why.
They combined. Like, yeah, that's interesting to mash up Roman numerals and
numbers
with words. Okay.
So it is Edge and Christian defeated the Dudley Boys and the Hardy Boys. The Dudley Boys were the tag team champions going into this.
Oh, okay.
And it's the second ever tables, ladders, and chairs match for the WWF tag team titles. It goes 15 minutes and 47 seconds.
I could buy that. That felt a little long.
Yeah. Okay. And so, and also in this match, it's kind of, so.
Well, there's a lot of like shenanigans in this one.
So a month earlier, ECW had closed.
Okay.
And that's why Paul Heyman is calling the match.
Gotcha.
He was the owner of ECW. And just one weekend Raw, after Jerry Lawler had been fired because his wife was fired, and he decided to quit. And
who was this? Who's his wife? Or who was it?
Stacy Carter, the cat. She showed her boobs on a pay-per-view once.
Oh, okay.
That's why she was popular. No one's really sure why that happened. That there's all these different rumors about that. But so the King is out, and all of a sudden on Raw in March, Paul Heyman shows up, and
it was interesting hearing him call matches. I wasn't used to that.
And like ECW had a pay per view in January, a couple of shows at the end of January, and then they were just kind of waiting to announce when their next shows would be. But Paul Heyman showing up on Raw was the first a lot of the guys knew, like, oh, ECW is closed. We're not actually going to keep going. So Rhino was the ECW World and TV Champion at the time. He had both belts. And he shows up 2 weeks later on Raw as Edge and Christian's friend, which he was. They really
were friends. Yeah, like, they all had their own little like
independent
side pieces.
Like in Canadian independence, they grew up together and traveled through like travel. I think Edge told a story once about when they were wrestling, they'd have to drive through like they'd wrestle at like Indian reservations, would hold like their shows in like Saskatchewan and stuff, and they'd have to drive over like rivers of ice and stuff get there.
Yeah.
And very Canadian
that
problems.
Probably
hit a moose on the way. So Rhino was their second. I mean, he doesn't come out with them, but he interjects himself in the match first, and then Spike Dudley, Bubba, and Devon's. They're all half brothers.
Right.
Daddy Dudley impregnated all the women of Dudleyville.
Mm-hmm.
And Spike was the little runt of the litter. And actually, in ECW, he always feuded with the Dudley boys.
Oh.
But when he showed up in WWE,
he was their brother.
He was always their half brother.
Oh, okay.
But he showed up and he actually teamed with them because a bunch of the guys that the Dudley boys in ECW was like a 8-man group. But a lot of them weren't wrestlers, and they really sucked. So Spike was the next best wrestler.
Yeah.
So he comes out and gets involved. And then Lita and her huge boobs, which got involved at SummerSlam.
That's right.
They
come
out here, and
again.
I think they were even bigger here.
I think so, too. Well, here she took her shirt off.
So yeah, so you really know. You really get the view.
Yeah, I think that's actually for this one, I think I liked the other one better. Because
one
was, there's too much interference, too much shenanigans. Actually, I don't know, because there's the one move where Edge spear, was that Edge or Christian?
Yes, Edge
spear the
spears Jeff Hardy
off of the
belt,
off of the belts, which that was crazy.
Yeah,
that was a good move,
and it's always like shown as
I believe that.
Like,
yeah,
a high like
I guess that kind of maybe tips it to the WrestleMania, but overall, just everyone running out, it's too much. I don't like the people that are supposed to be in the match. They also had the weirdest clothes on.
Well,
all the mesh shirts.
That's a lot of 2001 just
talking. That's true,
talking.
Being 2001.
I mean, they had plenty of weird shirts at the one in 2000 also, I think.
Oh, I'm sure. But I just a little much to me. But there were some really crazy moves off the ladder. I think one of the Hardys did the forward flip onto the table.
Yeah, that was also Jeff Hardy.
Hardy.
He does that onto Rhino and Spike on the
outside. That's right.
Yeah.
So, and then Edge and Christian end up winning. They won the first one, too.
Yeah, and that was kind of...
They kind of won the same way, too. They just kind of outlasted everybody.
And although in this one, it didn't come off as well as they wanted, because Edge started climbing the one side, which you really shouldn't have. But the thing is that Rhino puts Christian on his shoulders, kind of, and climbs.
Oh, that's right.
And that kind of gives them the boost they needed, I think. Mm-hmm. To just show how he was the difference maker.
Gotcha. I thought it was fine.
Yeah.
Where do you have it on your list?
Well, I had the last one at 9.5. And I think I'd put this slightly above, maybe like 9.7. And so this is probably top 25. I think it's probably the best of the TLC matches. Of like any of the multi-man ladder matches that they would end up having later. This is probably the top of those. And I think it's just kind of like, it was a year, well, over a year, because the ladder match of the Hardys and Edge and Christian was October of 99. And this kind of wraps a bow around that.
The whole kind of series.
Feud for a while, because... I mean, Edge and Christian end up breaking up over the summer. And then the Dudleys and Hardys kind of...
I thought they were quote-unquote half-brothers. Or brothers?
They're brothers,
technically. Full brothers?
Yeah, not really.
How did they break up?
Well, Christian hits him with a DDT.
Oh, okay.
I mean, he turned on him. So, that's the first match that we watched from there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, also I have to mention... The gimmick battle royal, which takes place right after this.
We just watched the entry. Entry.
I do have to say, I think this will just get on. This might be my number 100 match.
Really?
It's a horrible match.
We didn't. And for the record, we didn't watch this.
Well, I did.
Oh, I didn't.
Yeah, you went up to bed for good reason. But I think this will get my number 100 spot just because of the ridiculousness of it. And it's the first time the WWF really like acknowledges their history.
Okay.
And kind of
like makes fun of themselves. Fun of themselves. Yeah, that's good.
But also it's the best time that they ever did it. Like any other time, like now when they have Raw reunions or whatever, it's always like at the end they just have like 20 guys come out on stage and wave, and then maybe Steve Austin comes out to the ring and drinks beer. And
Was it an actual match?
Yeah, it's a battle royal.
How long did it take?
It was a 3-minute battle royal.
Okay, that's what I was going to say. Any longer than that, I would be surprised.
No, and Iron Sheik won just because he probably was too fat to actually go over the top rope.
Well, but hey.
But then Sergeant Slaughter gets his heat back by coming in and beating him up. Because, you know, Iraq, you can't have an Iranian win a battle royal in 2001.
Nope, definitely not.
Yes.
Okay, and this was at the Astrodome.
Yes.
In Houston. Which was the world's first multi-purpose dome stadium, opened all the way back in 1965. And in 2014, it was added to the National Register of Historic Places.
Oh, so it can't get demolished?
It can, but it would have to get like delisted first, like Soldier Field.
Gotcha.
But for now.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. It's something I've never been. Probably won't be because there's nothing that actually goes down there.
Yeah, I don't really do anything there anymore.
Yeah, but it's... Of course, we want to remind you that we have plenty of great content on both podcast feeds here at the Place to Be Nation. The Place to Be Nation pop feed includes the Hard Traveling Fanboys, the longest running weekly episodic comic podcast in all of the Place to Be Nation, featuring Greg Phillips and Nick Duke, the DC For You, an in-depth look at the world of DC Comics with Russell Sellers and Todd Weber,
Laugh in Theater, a live watch comedy movie podcast hosted by Andy Atherton, the Brother-Sister Rewatch podcast, where siblings Kevin and Mary are reliving the classic sitcom The Office, episode by episode. Ooh, that sounds good.
Yeah, I knew you would get jealous at that one and start thinking of sitcoms that we can rewatch episode by episode. There's also The Great Debate, a podcast where Andy Atherton leads a panel through a series of arguments and topics far and wide. This week they did toppings on hot dogs being sauerkraut or relish, which if you bring it to someone in Chicago, there'd be...
What's the argument?
Like, which one would you prefer? Obviously, some people would argue that that's only scratching the surface, but it's a good podcast nonetheless. The Glenn Butler Podcast Spectacular brings you deep thoughts from the minds of Glenn Butler and his family and friends. We met Glenn Butler at the SummerSlam 2016. He was at the German Bear Hall.
Very nice. We have This Week in the NFL. Cowboy and D'Amato take you through recaps and previews of each week of the NFL season.
We have the NBA team with Adam Murray and Andrew Reach covering the world of hoops from coast to coast.
And the Year in Pop, a deep dive into pop culture year by year, hosted by Andy Atherton, Scott Carusculo, Dr. G and D'Amato.
And then heading over to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed includes the Place to Be podcast, The Mothership, where it all started, with JT Rosero and Scott Criscolo, taking you chronologically through the history of the WWE, the Place to Be main event with Scott Criscolo, Nate Milton, and Steve Willey, breaking down all of the current events in the world of wrestling.
Wrestling War Zone, a podcast retrospective reliving the iconic Monday Night Wars, brought to you by Jay-Z and Chad Campbell.
And that's where they look at Raw and Nitro from the same night and sort of break it down and say which one was better that night. And the early ones, it's pretty much all Nitro being better because they were actually taking it to Raw and Vince McMahon didn't know what was going on at first. And then Row 1, Seat 1 is a look inside the world of small town wrestling and beyond with host Ben Zanny welcoming a host of variety, a variety of guests each week.
Talking WCW heads to Center Stage Theater, where Tim Capel, Greg Phillips, and Jennifer Smith pay tribute to the legendary promotion from the Dirty South.
They're looking at certain WCW wrestlers. Each one picks a match and goes over it and picks how they, which one they think was the best. The Extreme Three-Way Dance takes you back to on a trek through the land of Extreme with JT Rosero, John D'Amato, and Jennifer Smith. So it's looking at ECW and its history.
Body Press Your Luck, a brand new wrestling podcast show, game show hosted by JT Rosero and Jordan Duncan.
Yes, so that's coming up soon. It's not yet on there, but I think one of us will be on there pretty soon.
One of us. I wonder which one.
Who knows? And don't forget to check out placetobenation.com each and every day. We have new voices and fresh takes bringing you articles on topics in the world of wrestling, sports, and pop culture.
Check out a brand new podcast feed brought to you by our very own Jennifer Smith. The Jenny Position can be found on Podbean, iTunes, and your favorite podcatcher app. It will be the new home to Geek and Sassy, Talk and Pop, Freak Out Drive-In, and lots of fun new content.
And if you're doing any of your online shopping this Christmas holiday season, make sure at Amazon.com, be sure to click on the Amazon banner on the right side of the Place to Be Nation homepage, or use www.placetobenation.com/Amazon. Takes you right to Amazon and helps you out at PTBN with no cost to you, just a little kickback to the site to help pay all the bills of the very high salary
members.
High rollers. I mean, that's why we're doing it.
Right.
Check out our social media page and message boards at www.bigelow34proboards.com for information on joining GWWE pay-per-view and TV match ever project. Get in the conversation today and start researching your list. And Cindy, let's get to our list.
Okay, let's do it.
In our next match, we stay the same arena, same city,
same card, same WrestleMania.
WrestleMania X7, the main event, Steve Austin defeats the WWF champion, The Rock, for the WWF title in a no disqualification match. In 28 minutes, 8 seconds.
It was long. I was about to say. That was, I think, definitely the longest one we watched. I like this one. I like this one better than their last match. Yes. Easily. I remember the last one, they're out. They were like,
yeah, they,
all the
right
props.
Away,
right away,
yeah.
They're out of the ring. I mean, they're out of the ring in this one, too.
But they're around the ring, at least. Like,
yeah.
They don't have to fight all over.
Right.
I actually thought they actually did go into the crowd for a little bit in this one, but they actually didn't.
They didn't?
I think maybe, like, Austin or The Rock throws the other one over the barricade, but they don't actually go out and brawl through the crowd and brawl all over the place. Also, before we actually get to the match, Limp Bizkit has done nothing good in their career ever. But through Limp Bizkit, editing, and the great production team of the WWF,
that
4-minute video for My Way is 4 of the best minutes of WWF television ever. So good. So the whole storyline of the match, like, you really don't get it in that video promo. They kind of try to show you some of the stuff, but the main thing is Steve Austin was out for a year because he had neck surgery. Also, he was run over by a car, but really he had...
Wait, I was going to say quotes run over by a car? Well,
The story was he was run over by a car. He was hit by a car at Survivor Series 99, but the reason he was hit by a car was because he needed neck surgery.
That's kind of a weird sentence.
Yes, obviously. So he was hit by a car, so he was out for a year. He came back, and his first few feuds were with Rikishi, who hit him with the car.
Oh, that's not good.
And then Triple H, who they found out was the guy behind having Rikishi hit him with the car.
Hired the hitman. Yes. Hired Rikishi.
But then Steve Austin wins the Royal Rumble. And The Rock wins the title at No Way Out because Kurt Angle was the champ. But it was kind of like Austin versus Kurt Angle would be a great match.
Mm-hmm.
But
it would be.
This was going to be, not attendance-wise, but like stature-wise, this is the biggest WrestleMania ever. It's widely called the best pay-per-view of all time.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's this match, it needed to be Austin versus The Rock. It needed to be the two biggest stars. Mm-hmm. Of the Attitude Era, of the time. I mean, you could kind of argue, I wouldn't, but you could argue this is the end of the Attitude Era. It's all downhill from here, that's for sure. It's a week after Vince McMahon bought WCW. So there's no more competition. So I think that's kind of why the downslide started.
Motivation.
Yeah. And it's...
So the Attitude Era is over. What era are they in right now, you think?
Like now, presently?
Yes.
Well, like, Attitude Era kind of goes on for a little bit here, and then 2002 starts the Ruthless Aggression Era, you would say. Because it's like Vince McMahon made it like the catchphrase then for a while. John Cena came out and said, I want to show I have ruthless aggression.
Oh.
So then ruthless aggression kind of bleeds into like the Cena era, you would almost say. And then after that, it's kind of the PG era in 2008. Then a lot of people said 2011 was the reality year. Because it's when CM Punk had his big interview. Or like he cut a promo on like all the stuff bad in the company.
Right, yeah.
And then... Now, I don't know. I would just kind of say this is the network here where things kind of never end and just keep going and going and there's no finality to anything.
Okay. Now I was just curious.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what definitively this is, and isn't it sometimes you can't,
right, can't title an era until it's over.
While you're living it? But
okay, but you can say Attitude Era ended 2002, and this is probably...
Right, 2002, maybe Attitude. 2003, you could stretch it to WrestleMania that year, because that's when Austin and Rock both have their final matches for a while, at least.
Gotcha.
So, this match, though, so both guys bleed all over the place.
Yep, they both bleed.
First, The Rock does like a little sissy blade job, where it's not really that much.
Oh, yeah, he doesn't bleed very well.
But then Austin slingshots him into the post, and I guess The Rock didn't want to look like a pussy, so he blades himself again, and then he's even bleeding all over the place. Like
this is the one that the ring was getting covered in blood.
Yeah, it was already covered in blood from the match before with the Undertaker and Triple H.
That's right. That was a little gross. But yeah. They another match, they both used the bell.
Yep, both used the bell. Austin uses the belt.
The bell.
Yeah, they had a lot of good...
Oh, yes.
It's like
Vince
5 minutes
McMahon
left.
Comes out, yep. Blah. He kind of interferes. Kind of.
A bit.
He does. He interferes, yeah. Yes.
But so the whole thing was in the My Way video, they even. The one.
Limp Bizkit foreshadows it?
Yes, Limp Bizkit foreshadows it. Well, the one thing that they have. Like, there was a sit down promo that the two had
a week or two, like 2 weeks beforehand, in the locker room with Jim Ross moderating.
Obviously.
Trying to keep it professional. And The Rock says, like, he says, Austin 316 says, I just whipped your ass. Well, at WrestleMania, you just go ahead and try to whip The Rock's ass. And then Steve Austin says, I need this more than you could ever imagine. I need that WWE title. So it's kind of, they're foreshadowing it there. You don't really know it, but they're foreshadowing that Steve Austin would do anything to win the title.
So they tried to set it up.
They did set it up. And
even
it,
pair with the devil, Vince McMahon.
You're right. And it kind of, it works in retrospect, I think.
It wasn't probably, it was probably too subtle.
It was too subtle, and at the time, like, in late 99, Austin and Rock were, they were both, even then they were both the two top faces, and Rock was kind of starting to outshine Austin, I think, but then Austin was gone for a year.
Right.
Whenever you're gone for a year, people want to see you more. Mm. So he came back and he was
more the mystique.
He was more popular, and like, even The Rock was getting booed at times in the lead up to the WrestleMania when he would badmouth Austin. So, and then it's 70,000 people in Houston, Texas.
Okay. So, yeah,
against
right away.
The Texas Rattlesnake.
Right, right.
So, I mean, yeah, everyone there wasn't from Texas, but the majority of them were. So, mm-hmm. He's the home state at the very least. Boy, he's not going to get booed.
No.
And even when Vince McMahon hits Rock with a chair, it's almost more like Vince is turning face the way the crowd react. They're cheering Vince McMahon for hitting The Rock more than they're booing.
Right.
You know, because I think, and Austin even on his podcast, he's talked about this a lot. And he always says if he could have done it again, instead of shaking Vince's hand, he would have given him a stunner.
Ooh.
And then let that end the show with him still celebrating. And then just the next night on Raw, you could do the heel turn. And kind of said, like, he should have called an audible, he thinks. Because that's, I mean, that's what everyone remembers. Like, if he had turned heel on Raw the next night, yeah, people would have remembered it, but it's not the
not as much. There's the one thing on this match. Right, yeah, less people would be watching then.
Well, actually, more people watch
Raw.
Most people watch Raw than the pay-per-views.
Oh, that's true.
But it still would be more memorable.
Right.
On a pay-per-view.
Right, for sure.
So, yeah. And so Austin hits the stunner, doesn't do it. Hits the Rock Bottom, doesn't do it.
Mm-hmm. There was a lot of kickouts.
Oh,
in this
yeah.
Match.
They each.
A lot of,
everyone
do you
hits
know
their
how many?
Finisher. Do I don't know how many kickouts total, but everyone hits their finisher. Rock hits the Rock Bottom and People's Elbow. So both of his finishers.
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, they were doing
and
everything.
And they each have a sharpshooter at one point. Steve Austin locks in the $1 million dream, which after he lost to Bret Hart,
oh, yeah.
said he'd never use
that.
It again. And
it didn't
he,
work. This
he uses
time.
It here. But this time he at least knows to release the hold to get out of the pinfall predicament. And finally, Steve Austin uses his new finishing maneuver, which is hit the Rock with the chair 18 times
That's
in a row.
Right.
And
not very subtle.
Nope. Just sometimes you got to kill a guy with a chair, and it does, and he wins.
It works. Well, and like I said, Vince McMahon also kind of facilitated.
Well, yeah, he broke up one pinfall.
Right.
And then he hits the Rock with a chair, and then I think at one point he gets in the ring, and the Rock pulls him in the ring and goes after him. And that's when Austin hits him with, I think, the stunner maybe. And then. Mm-hmm. So, where would you...
I know we have, well. I'm not doing a top 100.
Right.
I was thinking I've not really thought about of the six we watched how to order them, but let's just do that at the end. So what
okay.
are you?
Yeah, that's a good idea. So for me, 10 out of 10. Again,
another 10 out of 10.
Yep. Getting a little competitive, I know.
I was gonna say you really.
But this
started
is,
to split hairs.
This is my number 3 match of all time.
Oh, number 3.
Yes,
oh, okay.
I'm a huge fan of it. The only thing I would nitpick is really the Vince McMahon stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Although, in retrospect, you gotta respect the balls it took of the WWF to take their biggest face of all time, which he was at that point,
right.
and make him a heel.
Yeah.
It didn't work. It didn't work immediately, and it definitely didn't work long term. But they tried it, and it's trying something different, and...
Never know unless you try.
Yep. And... It failed, but you had to do it, and they did it. So good on them, but hopefully next time it works better, which there probably won't be a next time because
they're never going to have another person that's a face the level of Steve Austin. And that ship has sailed with John Cena, and he was the only guy who could maybe even do it.
Right, sorry, I'm just taking a chance to like come up with some rankings of mine for the week.
So Next, we go all the way to March 28th, 2010.
Oh, 2010. Okay, yep.
2 days after our second date.
Oh, that's right.
Yes, very nice.
I was not watching WrestleMania 26 2 days after our second date.
I mean, you should have come over for that also.
I don't know what I would have thought of after our second date. If you would have invited me over to watch wrestling.
Well,
I don't know if I'd be sitting here right now.
Yeah, maybe it was a good idea to hold back a little bit.
Mm-hmm. What did you do for that? Did you?
I actually just ordered it because my parents were in
Disney
with my sisters, and I actually went to the Blackhawks game with my uncles that night and had been invited over to Mr. Furch's house, but decided to just order it on myself on paper because I didn't want to have to be traveling back and forth.
Right.
So I just ordered it and watched it when I got home.
Okay.
On like a 2-hour delay, kind of.
Gotcha.
So this was at the time, the University of Phoenix Stadium in Glendale, Arizona.
Now the State Farm?
Now it's the State Farm Arena or Stadium?
State Farm Stadium.
Okay.
You're making me second guess all of the attendance records I found, because a lot of my stats were attendance records, and what I found was this still holds the record for that stadium.
Let me see.
It's at 72,219.
Well, Dave Meltzer really doesn't dispute 72,000?
Yeah.
219, yeah. Well, eventually, even recently, because now they have to report the attendance. Here they had to because it's a stock, because they're a publicly traded stock.
Right.
So that's a huge point of revenue.
Yep.
But at one of them, I think 3 or 4 years ago, Vince McMahon admitted that the announced attendance is part of the entertainment aspect.
Oh.
Because, of course it is, obviously.
Kind of a stretch.
But he was saying they announced the actual gate, but sometimes they might, for entertainment value, increase the actual attendance announced figure.
Oh, that's lame.
Yeah, but, I mean, no matter what, any WrestleMania now will always set that stadium's attendance record. Whether or not it does or not, who knows.
Okay.
But
I gotcha.
So, actually, 2 years after this, we made our way to the University of Phoenix Stadium.
Oh, that's right. Yes, we've been to this stadium before. I mean, I don't really remember it because I was a little intoxicated.
Well, the problem was it was a 3 o'clock Central Time Zone Bears game, but it was a 1 o'clock there, and we were up at like
very
7
early,
or
right.
so. And did we get... Yeah, we got it in the day before.
Yeah,
we did. Because we went to the Frank Lloyd Wright house out there.
Yeah, that was cool.
And so we were up at like... It was probably like 7 o'clock Arizona time.
Right.
And the hotel was serving alcohol right away. And if you were a Bears fan, it was, I think it was free.
I think there was a tailgate there.
There was a tailgate. We were playing catch with like a couple of 10-year-olds in the courtyard.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and the game, the Bears kind of killed them.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least won very handily. At the end of the third quarter, I looked and you had wandered away. And next thing I knew,
smart.
I got a text that you were back at the hotel. So I went back to the hotel I stayed for the rest of the game because I knew you were safe. You had texted me that you had made it back.
I can't believe I just left.
The hotel we had there was a huge parking lot it was across, but it was right next to the stadium.
That's true. I wasn't wandering around for long.
So, and then I walked into the hotel. You were asleep. So I went down to the hotel and had a hamburger and then went back up to bed.
Yep. Well, yeah, I get up at 7 in the morning, go to bed at 4 p.m.
Obviously.
Great day.
That's how you do it in the mountain time zone.
Right, yeah, before you get acclimated.
So, the match itself, we should get to that.
This is John Cena versus Batista.
Yep.
Straight singles match.
Batista defending his world title, lost it to John Cena.
That's right.
13 minutes, 31 seconds.
13 minutes, yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
Because this is... Dave Batista was being whiny, saying he should be the face.
Yeah, so, yeah.
That was all the build-up was about.
They built it up as they both came in at the same time.
Right.
They both became champ at the same WrestleMania 21. And at that time, Batista won the Raw title and John Cena won the SmackDown title. But then over the summer, they switched
shows. So Cena went to Raw, Batista went to SmackDown. And even then, Raw was the A show, SmackDown was the B show. So it was kind of like...
Oh, I found another fact that you cannot dispute.
Oh.
This is the first WrestleMania to be held in Arizona.
I agree.
Can you dispute that?
I cannot. Even Dave Meltzer can't dispute
good,
that.
Okay, good, good.
Definitely agree with that remark.
Okay.
So, Cena wins. I think it's better than their SummerSlam match.
Oh, yeah. I think so, too. I didn't think this one was really that great.
Right.
I don't know why these two just aren't doing it for me.
I don't know. I like this a lot more because it's just kind of like, this is really like, I don't know, I guess John Cena's Captain America and Batista's probably the Hulk, if you had to compare.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like these two guys just battling. Like
I did say it was like Rock and Sock and Robot.
Yeah, there's not a lot of psychology.
Huge,
it's not...
Right.
I mean, John Cena actually wins by submission, which is kind of odd for this match, but actually, WrestleMania 22, 23, 24, and 26, he wins by submission each time. So they were really trying to get it over that he could beat anyone with his submission move, even though it's weak as shit.
Oh, his crossbody?
His face. STFU.
That's right. No, it's not that good.
Yeah, but, you know, what? It's okay. There's worse moves than that. At least it's not an elbow drop.
True, yeah.
At least he's not pitting people with his five-knuckle shuffle.
Right.
So this match, I give it 8.5.
Okay, yeah.
I think it's going to be on my list. It'll probably rank in right in like the 70s, 60s
area. Lower on the
list, yeah, like lower, upper half of the lower half, I guess.
Upper half, the 25th, the second percentile?
Yeah, it'll be probably about somewhere between 60 and 75.
Okay.
I think. if I had to narrow it down. All right.
Okay.
Anything else?
No, it was pretty, like I said, these really aren't really doing it for me. It's just like, it's like the two Titans.
Right.
Just like two huge guys slugging it out. But not very
not your
nuanced.
Cup of tea.
Yeah. Just not my cup of tea. Speaking of juiced up guys for our next match.
So we go to the Camping World Stadium.
Mm-hmm. In Orlando.
75,244.
Oh, but
disputed.
Oh, really? Disputed.
It says it on the Wikipedia page.
Yeah, because that's also the attendance record for the Camping World.
Of course.
But maybe not. I'll have to stop relying on Wikipedia for my facts.
I don't know. I'm sure it's close enough.
Mm-hmm. What's the largest sporting event you've ever been at? Do you know?
It would be WrestleMania 20. Or no. Well, probably 23. It was in Ford Field, although I don't know what they said WrestleMania... Here, actually, let me go back page. So WrestleMania 30 I was at, that's 75,000. And Ford Field was 80,000. So yeah, it would be 80,000 for Ford Field. So have you ever been to the Camping World Stadium?
I have not.
Orange Bowl?
Actually, no, I've not been there.
Oh, really? I thought maybe you went for a bowl there.
Yeah, freshman year was the Gator Bowl. That was in Jacksonville. That was the only Florida Bowl that I went to.
Gotcha.
I think the sporting event, I was just trying to look it up. It would have been 2005 when Notre Dame played Michigan at Michigan. I think that was over 100,000.
Okay.
Might be disputed. But.
No, I'm pretty sure they definitely could get 100,000.
Right.
I'm sure for Notre Dame, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
So, looking at this real quick. One, two, three, four. Six. Seven. I've been to 8 sites that have had a WrestleMania.
Okay.
How about you?
Been to 8 sites? I would have to look at the list.
Allstate Arena.
We've been to Allstate. I've been to the Cardinal one with you, obviously.
Have you ever been to Madison Square Garden?
Yes, I have, actually.
Oh, okay. That's something I have not. Uh-huh. I've posed as Randy Savage outside of it.
We did do that.
I have not been in it.
Well, next time we go to New York, we'll have to go to something there just because.
Yeah. And actually, 8 is because I'm counting Raymond James Stadium, the pirate ship,
next year. Oh, yeah. That's right.
But also...
I don't have all the WrestleMania venues.
The Staples Center.
So. Been there.
Yeah. The Pond in Anaheim. Mm-hmm. We were there.
I've probably been to all the same ones. Actually, that's not true, because you've been to the...
I was at the Silver Dome.
Right, yeah.
That was...
I've not been to Ford Field or the Silver Dome.
Yeah, I was Silver Dome and... I was Silver Dome for a Bears game in Ford Field for WrestleMania.
Okay.
So, Camping World Stadium.
For Brock Lesnar versus Goldberg.
Yep, and this match goes...
It's very short.
But it, like, triples their...
That's true.
Their first match. Hold on one sec. Sorry. Here we go. So this match goes 4 minutes 45 seconds. There are four different moves used.
The suplex is one of them. No, I can name the suplex.
Okay,
the
German one you suplex. See
the most of. It's a spear in there.
Yep, the spear. Brock Lesnar's finisher.
The F5.
Yep. And Goldberg's finisher.
Oh, I don't know Goldberg's finisher.
It's the jackhammer.
The jackhammer. That's pulls you up actually, for a suplex yeah,
and
yeah.
then body slams you.
That was good.
And
the fact he did it to Brock Lesnar is pretty impressive.
And I'm pretty sure that, Goldberg or Brock Lesnar kicks out of it. I'm pretty sure that was the only time that ever happened.
I remember you saying that at the time.
Like, including Goldberg. Well, I'm not sure about Goldberg's full WCW career.
Why not?
The late WCW is
a no
thing,
bueno.
A thing.
We're not going to be any matches on the list.
That, well, it can't be. That's...
Oh, WCW's separate, off limits.
Yeah, because it's not... Oh. It's only WWE branded. It's not things that they've acquired the rights to.
Gotcha. Is there going to be another list where you rate all the WCW ones?
I don't know, because WCW's weird. Like, you could go back to the 70s with it. You could go back to the 80s. You could go back to 1989. The lineage of it is very spotty.
We don't have to get into that.
Yeah, that's another conversation. I'll have you talk to the higher-ups at the Place to Be Nation.
Okay.
See where WCW should go. But, anyways, so... Yeah, so this... There's only four moves used, but... This is even more of a, like, superheroes clashing than the Cena Batista.
Because
there is no transition moves. There's no headlocks. There's nothing. It's boom. It's... Right away, Brock Lesnar hits three German suplexes, I think. Goldberg hits two spares. Lesnar goes to the outside. Goldberg hits a spear through the barricade.
Right, that's right.
Then I think he hits the jackhammer. Or I think he probably hits like a couple more spears in the ring. Jackhammer. Goldberg kicks out. Or Lesnar kicks out.
Right.
Lesnar hits like seven more suplexes and then the F5 and that's it.
Well, yeah, they say he was going to hit 10. Or yeah,
he hits. Four counting. He makes his 10.
Is that like, was that a thing for him to hit 10?
He kind of, the last couple of matches he had, he'd always get at least that many.
Oh, okay. Yep, so it's quick. Brock Lesnar wins. Like I said, Brock Lesnar always wins the big matches.
Well, he didn't the first...
I know.
And also, this was...
disproven.
The pre-match promo is pretty good. It's Brock or it's Paul Heyman, of course, talking.
Oh, his, like,
and
fairy
he's doing,
tale.
Like, a fairy tale. And it story. Also,
I thought that was okay.
It touches on... Their first match was at WrestleMania 20.
Mm,
and this was... Like, you said you want to see a bad match. That would be a bad match,
oh, really?
Example. Because it's... So, everyone knew Goldberg's
contract. Oh, we already talked about this. Goldberg, yeah, we talked
Goldberg's
about this
contract
last time.
Was up. Lesnar announced he was leaving.
Yep.
Everyone hated it. Yep. It's boring. They do, like, boring submissions that they're not supposed... That these two aren't supposed to do.
Okay. Yeah, well, maybe if I need to see, like, a baseline. I feel like my baseline's not very good because you're just watching the good ones.
Right. And this, I think, is the best... sub-5-minute match ever.
Ever?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I feel confident saying that because it's just...
Well, that's, yeah, it's move for move. It's every 2 seconds. There's
exactly.
Something
there's something happening. It's, and that's what you want from these guys. Like, you don't want to see these guys wrestle a 20-minute match. These guys are high impact.
They're kind of built for the short...
Yeah, and short that's what this match should have been, and that's what it was, and it's...
What was the point of the whole Goldberg, of bringing back Goldberg?
It really started with the video game.
Like, oh,
he was the special character the year before in the video game. And they kind of decided, hey, we should have him. He's kind of obviously talked with WWE and was like, hey, I kind of want to do some more matches.
Arc, yeah.
And so they did him versus Lesnar at Survivor Series.
So were all his matches only like 4 minutes long?
Yeah, most of them were. This was the longest, I think.
Oh, for yeah.
Because they had the Survivor Series match. He was in the Rumble for like 3 minutes. And then the month before this, he fought Kevin Owens. And that's like a 20-second match. He wins the title.
Oh, okay.
And then
so he wasn't really in it for the long haul.
No, but he was there and showed up and did his thing. And I think it's...
Okay. Well, I remember when we were watching the match, I made a comment that I liked his tights, his black tights, like the white ribbon. Yeah. And you were like, ooh, I have something to tell you about that.
Well, yeah. So in WCW, he just wore black.
Okay.
And when he came to WWF, his music changed slightly. It was basically the same, but a little different. And then he changed his tights to
the longer tights
with the white piping, and people freaked out.
People freaked out about that? Yes, exactly.
Because they're wrestling fans. Oh, okay. But they were like, oh, it's WWF trying to make him their own thing, and they can't let him be successful doing what he was doing. And part of that's true. They weren't making him... They were having him go out and wrestle 7 or 8 minute matches, where in WCW his thing was a minute and a half squash matches.
Gotcha.
But him changing his tights wasn't a problem. Like that's
like the least of the worries. People
focusing on minute things to make it into a bigger deal than it is.
Sounds familiar. I think that happens a lot.
Yep, I would agree. It happens in our country and all over the place. A lot of
different contexts, yeah.
All right. I think it's the top sub 5 minute match in WWF history. I don't know what you could really rate it. I would say 9, because I don't think you could go. You can't go 10 out of 10.
There's not enough stuff. There's not enough moves. Not enough drama.
And as far as where it'll rank, I'm not sure. I think probably just over top 50.
Oh, okay.
So like 40s ish. That's a match where, when I'm making the list, it's going to be one of those ones where...
Think about it, yeah.
If I have the list, I'm just going to start ranking it above individual matches.
Gotcha.
See where it lands. All right, so for you, the ratings. These 6 matches, what would be your number six? What's the lowest?
I don't know. I feel like probably the Brock Goldberg, just because it's the shortest.
Okay, yeah.
And it's hard to kind of, because both of them are so short, it's kind of in a different league as the rest of them.
Right. It is. Yeah, it's hard to rank them against others.
Yeah, yeah. So, actually, it's kind of similar. I should pull up my notes from last week to see how they compare. So, that's 6. I think 5 is the John Cena Batista. Like I said, those two aren't doing it for me.
Yeah.
I don't know what, just the style or the moves, it just wasn't really meh. Number 4, I would say the Tables, Ladders, Chairs match. With the Hardys, Dudleys, Christian. I think they always put on a good TLC match. Like I said, too much outside interference for my liking. But overall, very good. That, like I said, the spear off of the belt is just crazy. And some of the other moves. I mean, poor Jeff Hardy. Did he volunteer to do all those things? Or was he
volunteer? They say that he would always, whenever they were thinking of stuff, he'd always come up with the craziest.
Let's see. Then I think number 3 would be the Bret Hart versus Steve Austin at the WrestleMania 13. Okay. Like I said, too much blood for me, but I know they got the iconic
shot
of Steve Austin there. I think this one I fell asleep the first time we watched this, so we had to restart it. Yes. So
we got to see the drunk in the crowd, though, patting all 3 of their heads.
There was actually a good amount of time outside the ring on this one. Number 2, I would put the Macho versus Steamboat,
because
it is very, iconic for a lot of reasons.
Right.
A lot of good moves.
Even watching it now, you could tell it's kind of like a genre setting.
Yes.
A more athletic thing than...
Oh, for sure.
I mean, even... You not sitting through a lot of crap in the mid-80s WWF, you could even tell that this is something different than what was going on.
Exactly. And then number 1, I really liked the Austin Rock match.
All right, yeah.
I think that was definitely my favorite of the week.
All right, yeah, I could see that. I mean, like I said, my ratings are a little different, but for one thing, it's 2 and 3 of my top matches of all time. So it's not like I'm...
So what's 2 and 3? So 2
is Austin, Brett. 3 is Austin, Rock.
Oh, okay. Where's yeah. the Ricky Steamboat one? You said it's like 15.
It's probably like 15-ish.
Yeah, okay. It
might sneak into my top 10. I don't think so because I'm.
And when's the list due again?
New Year's Eve.
Okay. Okay. So yeah, you'll figure it out by then.
Maybe that episode we could just go over my list and kind of show where I have okay. stuff.
Oh, maybe not all 100. That'd be a long,
no, that'd be a little long.
Long show.
Yeah. I'm not saying we watch all 100.
I see. Yeah.
Just kind of say where the matches ended up ranking, maybe, that gotcha. We watched.
Okay.
And for next week.
Yeah, what do you have on tap?
So I did have one plan, but actually I'm going to bump that back a few weeks because okay. what pay-per-view is coming up next in WWE calendar?
Survivor Series.
Yes. Well, actually, technically something comes before Survivor Series.
What?
We're going to
NXT it. Survivor Series?
NXT War Games.
NXT War Games. Yes. I didn't know the official name was War Games.
Yes, okay. There will be two War Games matches there. So next week we're going to watch four Survivor Series matches and one War Games NXT match. Because War Games is actually a WCW thing.
Okay. But what makes it a War Game? Well, we can talk about it next week. I'll learn.
We'll figure out what it is then.
I'm learning so much.
Yes.
Actually, the one thing I am learning a lot about is like the different ways that matches can be structured. Like, is it submission? Is it pinfall? No disqualifications?
Right. One of
the steps. The last, what was the one where they had to count to 10?
Last man standing.
Last man standing. I didn't, yeah. That's just the little stuff I didn't really think about before. Yeah. I don't know why I would. So
right.
I didn't.
It wouldn't make sense to think about that before. So next week will be our Survivor Series.
'Tis the season.
Look. Yes. Yes. And will you continue to take this ring with me?
Yes, I will.
All right, that's great. I'm very happy to hear that.
Good.
All right, we'll be back next week.
Bye.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.